Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Nagler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Happy Tuesday. The Packers had their second open OTA practice for the media earlier this afternoon. Did just a quick little reaction slash breakdown with Justice, dropped here on the channel a little bit ago. If you hadn't had a chance to check that out yet, encourage you to do so when we're done. Obviously, nothing earth-shattering during an OTA practice, but a few nuggets that you could talk about, we could highlight, so to speak. And one of the things that I saw that got me excited, Marshawn Lloyd actually practicing. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, he was there, he was practicing, he was participating. It's a small thing, I understand, but for a guy who has been as snake-bit as Lloyd has been, certainly you go through the offseason, then you arrive at the first practice last week, and he's with the rehab group. But it gets you a little a certain kind of way, I understand, but just exciting to see Lloyd practicing and thinking about the ways he can help the offense. And something that Justice brought up that I thought was spot on is the potential for some big plays from your bench. You know, the idea that when you have to take Jacobs off the field, or really any frontline starter, and you turn to your backups, you don't, you know, typically expect explosive plays, big plays, chunk plays, what have you, to, you know, come from that area as far as production goes. But man, you can see throughout his game in college anyway, that potential is there. Now, obviously, it's a different thing to do it in the NFL against NFL competition, but certainly in Matt LaFleur's offense, that upside is certainly available. You heard Matt talk a little bit about it in the post-practice presser today. Now, he's got to do it consistently. He's got to show that he can hold up, not only being able to stay on the field, obviously, A, number one, but two, show that he's adept in pass protection. He's able to be counted on in that regard. Otherwise, he won't be seeing the field, because that is a scenario where both, you know, Wilson and Brooks have excelled in front of him. So that is, you know, his quickest pathway into not only just being on the field, but being trusted in passing situations in particular. But then knowing the playbook, knowing the checks and the adjustments at the line of scrimmage, being in sync with the quarterback when it comes to reading defenses and coverages and things of that nature, there's a lot to go into there. But hopefully, not just as a running back out of the backfield being handed the ball, but certainly in the passing game, which is something Matt LaFleur has brought up unprompted a few times over the course of not just this offseason, but last year as well. That's where I think they probably envision his kind of contribution mostly coming from. So I'm very excited to see him out on the field, and very excited for this summer the pads come on to see how he is able to contribute and hopefully solidify himself as a viable second option in this offense. And not so much just, oh, Josh Jacobs needs rest or what have you, but a guy that they maybe potentially design some packages around and some plays for and utilize him as a weapon, as a chess piece. Now, that's very grandiose talk here sitting in early June, but he has that potential. He has that upside. Just have to prove that he can stay on the field and contribute consistently, and I think the sky is the limit. So excited to have him back out on the practice field. Like I said, not too many other news items or notes other than Kenny Clark in his post-practice availability, highlighting a little piece of information that had not been public to my knowledge up until today, when he uttered into a set of microphones in the collective media that he had surgery this past January for what he termed, I believe, an issue with his toe slash some bunions there, a injury that he suffered week one down in Brazil and dealt with all season long. Now, I don't have to tell you, there are a whole lot of folks who've been down on Kenny Clark from last season. And I had a video here on the channel a couple weeks ago talking about getting Kenny back on the stat sheet. Because, yes, his numbers were down last year when it comes to quantifiable pressuring of the quarterback, sacking the quarterback, tackles for loss, things of that nature. But he still played at a high level last year, which I continuously said all year long. And it turns out he was doing so while playing with a busted toe that required surgery at the end of the year. Now, I hear what you're saying. Well, why was he out there? Because that's what pros do. They play through injury. And yeah, Kenny, go back and look at it. Toe injury was on the injury report for the balance of the season. It's this thing that just drives me nuts where people are like, oh, he's, you know, absolutely fallen off. And it's completely like he got paid and just shut it down. There's always probably, especially when you're talking about a veteran and a pro of Kenny's caliber, there's usually something behind it. You know, I still think it's going to be a tough position and or decision for the Packers to make next offseason when his cap number does skyrocket. You know, I think that obviously will prod him into having a productive year this year. You got to think that is something that he's going to be absolutely gunning for. But it's just interesting, these things that fans and there are a few games from last season where I remember having to bite my tongue when people were citing PFF grades. PFF grades when it came to Kenny Clark. And it's like, did PFF know he was battling a broken toe? Oh, no, they didn't, did they? All right. I just had to get that off my chest because, hey, look, it's one thing to say, you know, his production definitely took a dip. No question about it. You're between the white lines. You're judged accordingly, and you are going to be somewhat, you know, in the shadow of whatever production or non-production you put out there, put on tape, etc. Except when you talk about put on tape, he put a lot of good football on tape. It just wasn't about sacking the quarterback or making tackles for loss. But he was still a pretty significant component for a defense that played well enough to win more often than not. So that's my mini rant about Kenny for today. Good to see everybody in the comments section. Like to see everybody mixing it up already. Let's give a shout out to our good friends over at Ticket King. That's right. Based in Wisconsin since 1992, Ticket King is located across the street from Lambeau Field on Oneida. They're happy to help you find just the right tickets for Packers games, from larger groups to single tickets, both home and away. They partner with local Green Bay businesses for tailgating and bus transportation to the games, so you don't have to worry about driving or parking. They're even open on game day for last-minute tickets or possible upgrades. Hell, they even have a drive-through window. And if you're not in Green Bay, no problem. Just use the Ticket King link on the Cheesehead TV homepage or in the description of this video. Don't use Ticketmaster, StubHub, SeatGeek, none of these national companies. Use a company based in Wisconsin since the early 90s. Ticket King, for all your Packers ticket needs. Do it, people. You know you'll want to. You want to see the Packers playing live and in person. Use your friends over at Ticket King. What's going on, folks? Good to see everybody mixing it up. This is such a good question right out of the gate. I love this. All right, Callum, do I think Love will ever grow a mustache or a beard? Okay, I need someone on the internet to get on that and give us a Photoshop version of, you know, like a 70s looking Jordan Love. I need that in my life. Well, you see, Carolina, I appreciate this honesty. My bad, Kenny. I was wrong to cast all those aspersions. You see, a little come to Jesus moment. I like it. Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon, Tommy. How are you? Thanks for checking out the stream, man. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Look at all these good. Dennis, how are you? Good to see you, buddy. Dale Norton is here. How are you, Dale? Good afternoon, but I don't know from where. Interesting. Keeping the location hidden today, huh? Ian, thanks for the super chat, man. Aaron, it's been a bit. Hope all is well. Thank you to Cheesehead TV for keeping us informed on all things Packers. Are you going to be in Green Bay for week one? Ian, mid-Packers fan. Yes, Ian, 100%. You know this if you showed up for happy hour. I kid. Yes, week one. We'll be having some kind of event the night before the game. So circle your calendars, get ready. We'll be having a Cheesehead TV event the Saturday night prior to the Sunday showdown with the Detroit Lions at Lambeau Field opening weekend. Cheesehead TV will be in the house in Green Bay, ready to party, getting ready for a knockdown dragout with the Motor City Kitties. Cannot wait. Brandy, how are you? Thanks for the super chat. Packers looking at Lucas Van Ness along the interior. Something we did see today, or Pete Doherty saw and tweeted about. Yes, Lucas Van Ness was running inside today, on various, you know, kind of planes, so to speak, as far as with the ones, he was running at the kind of defensive end position, and then with the twos, they were kicking him inside. Obviously, Matt was asked about that after the practice, and he talked about, you know, in certain situational moments, i.e. obvious passing situations, there is some thought around kicking him inside. I did see, of course, you know, this is the internet, so obviously the sarcasm flows. Someone immediately responded to one of those tweets with, yeah, the Packers trying to salvage something here. I don't know if it's that. I do know he played inside quite a bit there at Iowa, and I know they have talked about, and Pete kind of pointed this out with his tweet during the practice, it's something we've heard them talk about the last 2 years, last two summers. They have spoken about the potential or possibility of kicking Lucas Van Ness inside. And it has happened, though, very intermittently and very sparingly. We'll see if this becomes a more of a regularity in year three. I still think it makes a world of sense as far as if you do get into a third and long, allowing him to kick inside and try and take advantage of some of these guards, centers, what have you, split some double team action, get upfield, create havoc. I do think there's a role there for him and a possibility for him. Not to mention, with so much kind of screen game in the league now and so much kind of inside out pursuit necessary from your interior guys, I don't mind having an athlete of his caliber on third and 10, third and eight, whatever, who, if they do chuck it outside and do try and get on the perimeter, I like his ability to get, you know, cross that field, cross that threshold, as it were, and work inside out pursuit and hopefully catch the ball carrier before he gets to the first down marker. You know, there's a lot to like with the idea of it. We'll see if this is something that lasts into training camp when the pads come on. Because, you know, this is the time where they're thinking about stuff. They're trying stuff. Matt alluded to this when he's asked about the offense. You know, this is they're working on things. They're trying to discover what they think can work, identity, what works with certain personnel, etc. So they're still in formative stages right now, but I like the idea. I'll say that. And I think it makes a world of sense. We'll see if it's something that lasts. Soder, LVN quicks give him an advantage against the guard in the center. That would be the hope, right? You would really hope that he'd be able to use some of that quick twitch ability to get past what you would suspect being, you know, some maybe more lumbering types there along the interior, though not always in today's game. But yeah, that's again, as an idea, I like it. I think it has merit.
Rye.
This is really good. Which 80s Packers team would have been the highest rated in Madden? I got to cheat here and probably say either 89 or maybe 84. Those would be my two guesses. Ooh, Isaiah, that's a deep cut right here. Do I think Glover will be able to secure a backup tackle position? Can't really say much of anything when it comes to the offensive line battles until we get to the summer and the pads come on, right? I think there's no doubt that that is going to be a kind of tough nut to crack, so to speak, with the additions they've made in the draft and in free agency. Not that he's obviously competing for a frontline position, but that does trickle down as far as numbers and who will be remaining. You know, it's going to be interesting to see who gets the opportunities this summer once the pads come on, especially given, you know, what they've got already with Jordan Morgan kind of competing at left tackle. And then possibly if he wins that job, you have to think Rashid Walker is probably your swing tackle at that point. And then that's before we even talk about Belton, you know, the rookie who they're probably running at tackle right now, though probably ends up at guard at some point. I don't know. There's a lot of pieces there. I think you like the idea. I think you saw last year was very inconsistent, but that's no surprise. I think he's got a shot, but he is going to have to be insanely consistent. Maybe he ends up on the practice squad. And I don't want to say it's the best case scenario, but I think it's the most likely. Dan J, how are you, man? Nags, when the dust settles in the wide receiver room, who do you think will be Love's favorite target, and why do you think it will be Tucker Kraft? See, it's funny because Tucker Kraft's not a wide receiver. That's comedy, ladies and gentlemen. You set up the expectation and you hit him with something else. I actually think it'll continue to be Romeo Doubs. I think he and Doubs clearly have a connection. I love the idea of, yes, Tucker Kraft being a lot more involved, being a kind of primary target in this offense as opposed to a secondary target. But yeah, I think Doubs will continue to be his favorite. I think they just have a real bond. Frank Marchant, thank you so much for checking out the stream on the Cheesehead TV X account. Hi, Aaron. Love your content and great insights. Frank Ireland. Go Pack Go. Well, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate you checking it out from across the pond, man. What else we got here, folks? Oh, Rai, I've been asked this before. Do you think the Packers would have won the Super Bowl in 08 versus the undefeated Patriots? No, I do not. The reason the Giants were able to win that game is because they were able to do, you know, pretty much control the game, control the line of scrimmage with their front four on defense. And as good as the Packers defense was playing, even down the stretch, I don't think they control that game the same way the Giants were able to. I think the Patriots probably win that game and complete their perfect season. But we'll never know. You can play it on Madden. That's about the closest we'll ever get. Packer Aggie. Visiting Queens later this month from Utah, what is your go-to pizza joint with your girls? Portobello here in Astoria. It is a old-school brick oven pizza place. Everything they make, though, is phenomenal. They are not just pizza. They do any Italian food you could think of, and I have never had a bad meal there. But Portobello in Astoria. Like I said, old-school brick oven place. Phenomenal pizza, phenomenal food. You'll love it. Check it out. Ooh, Joshua. Waiting on LVN is a fool's errand. That's my Gandalf voice. Possibly. I mean, anybody who's watched this channel for any amount of time can probably attest to the fact that I am dubious. And I think that's being kind as to the expectations for Lucas Van Ness to suddenly awaken. I do think he can be a lot more consistent and a lot more productive, but the idea that he's going to blossom into some superstar, some game wrecker, some field tilter, I think it's safe to say. That's probably not in the cards, right? But I do think there's still a lot there. There's still a lot of potential that is and has been untapped. And it's not crazy to think that we might see more out of him. Now, that's a low bar, I understand, but I get the frustrations. I certainly understand them, no doubt about it. Carrie, this is something we talked about a little bit yesterday. Nags, I see Detroit lost their number one all-pro center to retirement. With the other changes in personnel, does this shift thoughts on power in the North? Not necessarily. I do think, you know, they did draft a couple of interior linemen in this year's draft. I think they knew this was a possibility. Obviously, the brain drain on both sides of the ball is going to be the most interesting thing, especially when it comes to an offensive coordinator trying to design an offense and call plays for Jared Goff. I think Ben Johnson was a pretty prime ingredient on Goff's ascendancy. We'll see if that kind of production and consistency continues. I think, to me, that is the number one question with that team. But I don't think it slams the balance of power one way or the other significantly because they've lost their center. Certainly, it's a blow. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that guy wasn't amazing, because he was as a player, no doubt about it. But Dan Campbell's, you know, crew is not going to come tumbling down because they lost one piece. Let me see here. Stoffelmania. What a handle. Hearing rumblings, Goodell is unhappy with the gaming of the salary cap. Bad for parity. Thoughts? Yes, there have been a couple of reports around this. I think what that mostly points to for this next CBA negotiation is going to be a loss of, or a truncation and or some kind of, reduction in ability to use void years the way teams have gone kind of crazy with, right? I do think he wants to look into that, and I think they will look into that. I don't doubt for a moment that there's a pretty decent chance that they will do something in that regard. Now, it has to be in concert with the players' union. The other thing that I think you've heard rumblings about, if you've been reading the same shit I have, is the some of the ownership having some musings and pushing back on the idea of a 50-50 split with the players. Now, to me, the NFLPA should be making way more of a stink about this right out of the gate. And I know it's most likely a trial balloon because that's what they do at this time, as they're kind of gearing up for negotiation years from now. But there is no way on God's green earth this group of, you know, the NFLPA that has had to scratch and claw just to get to 50-50 should give anything back in that regard. Absolutely not. And I understand owners are going to talk about player costs and the stadiums that they all get public money for, by the way. But, you know, that should be absolutely off the table if I'm the players. Like, there is no way we're going less than 50. But that's a conversation for a couple years down the line. I don't want to get too bogged down in that right now. Richard, who do I think will be the best five for Jordan Love in terms of offensive targets? I assume you mean like you're throwing the ball to, right? Like I said, I don't think Romeo Doubs is going anywhere. I think that's his favorite. That's his kind of safety valve, so to speak. Looks for him in every situation. I think, you know, there's no doubt he's going to be a major component of the offense, whether fans like it or not. And there is a weird kind of anti-Romeo Doubs thing going on online anyway that I just don't understand. And then Jaden Reed, still going to be there, still insanely talented. He's got to hold on to the ball on third down, but yeah, he'll still be a major part of this offense. I think Matthew Golden, you saw reports today, man, he's running with the ones right out of the gate, doing a lot, some of the motion stuff, you know. And I do think where it's interesting when you talk about Golden versus Reed, Golden's out there already in two wide receiver sets, whereas Reed is not, you know. So that's, you know, if you're going 12, you have two tight ends, you only have two wide receivers. Golden's in that mix already. So I think he's going to be involved. I don't think they force feed him or anything like that, but you're talking about for the year, he's going to be in that mix. No question about it. Then Tucker Kraft, no doubt about that for me. I think we've heard Matt talk a lot about it over the course of this offseason. He will be involved in this passing game. We'll have more plays where he is the designated slash primary target. Like, they hopefully will be game plan specific plays for Tucker. I have hopefully, you know, a little section on Matt's play sheet every week, you know, with calls just for Tucker. That's the hope. And I suspect that it was going to be the case. And then at five, I don't know, man, that's tough. You get past that. I mean, any of the backs, maybe Josh Jacobs, maybe Marshawn Lloyd, maybe it's Luke Musgrave. I know Wicks is a potential there, but, you know, he's got to be able to see the field with regularity and he's got to hold on to the ball. But I think those are your main components that Jordan's probably going to be looking for most often throughout the season. That doesn't mean guys like Savion Williams can't get involved. Doesn't mean, you know, that Malik Heath might jump up one week or something. You know, it's like, it's not to say that these other guys won't be involved, but there is only one football and game plans are put together throughout the week. And I think those are the guys that are going to have their number called more often than not. Probably. I mean, that's just sitting here in June. This could all change by August. Ian, thanks again, man. Thanks for Super Chat. I'm a huge fan of Romeo. However, do you have any concerns with all the head injuries, concussions during the second half of last year? Based on the Tua situation, I'm sure the league is monitoring. Yeah, and much like the Tua situation, you know, they will allow him to gather all the information he needs, including information they undoubtedly provide, and then make whatever decision he thinks is best for him. And that's where I'm at with Romeo, right? I understand it can be frightening and it can be kind of off-putting, a guy suffering a couple of head injuries, and then you see him playing football again, and you do think about everything we've read and everything we know now regarding guys later in life and the effects, the long-term effects of head injuries. But man, if they're football players and they love the game and they don't want to leave it and they make the choice to continue playing, Godspeed. It's their choice. It's not mine. It's not yours. It's not the fans, not the teams. It's their choice. So yeah, if Romeo wants to keep playing, I'll be rooting for him. That's as simple as I can make it. And again, like, I understand that may feel callous and may feel kind of devoid of feeling, And I understand that that's the kind of implication there, right? No doubt about it. But man, that's his choice. That's his life. And if there is no one on this earth who's going to have more information about it than Romeo. So if he makes that choice, man, I'm 100% behind him. And if he makes the choice to step away, maybe he suffers another head injury early in the year and decides to shut it down. Like, I'll understand that too. But it's his choice. It's not mine, right? Ed, thanks for the super chat, man. Do the Packers have someone to help rookies navigate being in the NFL, or does the league do that? The league has a program of sorts, but the Packers have Rob Davis, who has in the past been kind of held that role. Now Gray Rugemer does a lot of that. But yes, the Packers have people to kind of help rookies assimilate to the NFL and kind of get situated, not just with how things work with the team, but also somewhat kind of in the community and things of that nature. But, you know, it's not a babysitting service. At some point, these are grown men. This is their profession, and they have to be professionals. But yes, there's a lot more of that now. There's a lot more awareness of that type of thing now than there used to be. Of that, there's little doubt. Brandy, thanks again. Was Sean Jones overshadowed by Reggie White? Yes. Sean Jones was fucking awesome. Now, Sean Jones was not a generational once-in-a-lifetime player, but he was an awesome football player, and he was a perfect complement to Reggie White. Man, you talk about a dynamic duo. You had a problem as an offensive coordinator trying to deal with that, no doubt about it. All right, everybody, I got to get going. I cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Please do me a monster favor, hit like, hit subscribe, and Patreon members, Carry the G Club members, don't forget, happy hour at the top of the hour tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Lambeau time. The respective information that you need is on your respective pages. The rest of you, please hit like, hit subscribe, tell your friends, tell your family, Cheesehead TV. We are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Go Pack, go.